You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, welcome to Blogging Heads TV. You're watching Culturally Determined, and I'm your host, Ari Cohen-Wade. And my guest today is Jim Newell. Jim, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jim Newell. I'm a staff writer for Slate covering the election.
So, Jim, thanks for coming on, and thanks actually for coming back on. This is actually a redo. We had a tech disaster, but, you know, second time's a charm. We're going to do it even better than the first time.
Yeah.
Okay, so the reason I asked you on today is you have been writing about the campaign extensively, you know, writing about it every day. You wrote something recently about Romney and whether Romney might, you know, kind of try to insert himself into this crazy process somehow. For the past 2 months, I've been going on and on in the same way that maybe the Unabomber had some unusual beliefs about my idea that Donald Trump actually doesn't want to win this thing. And I still think that Romney is more likely a GOP nominee at this point than Donald Trump. So what is your perspective on kind of like what's happened over the past couple months with Trump poised to capture the GOP nomination?
Well, I think it goes sort of in these waves of certainty and doubt. I mean, it looked like after, you know, he won all the states early on that he was almost certainly going to be the nominee. But then Cruz sort of came back and Trump was stepping on himself a lot. And Cruz was really picking up a lot of delegates at the convention level. So that it sort of was looking like, okay, they're going to find a way to stop Trump on the first ballot. And then it'll be Cruz or someone else at the convention. But then obviously campaign came back to the Northeast. Trump wrapped things up, everyone got out, and it became presumptive nominee status. But now, the last week, it's been Trump has been making sort of a fool of himself, especially now that he has all of these senators and governors and other officials in the Republican Party who are tied to him. So they're very vocal when he steps out of line and declares that a judge in his Trump University lawsuit case can't accurately judge on it because he is of Mexican heritage, or as Trump would say, he's a Mexican from Indiana.
Okay, why don't we get into that part? That has seemed to be weirdly, I mean, sometimes these things happen and they kind of build up and then there's like the straw that broke the camel's back. This is not the most offensive thing Donald Trump has ever said, that this judge who is, you know, assigned to to adjudicate some of the Trump University lawsuits is he can't do it. You know, Trump says this guy is biased because he is Mexican American. This is pretty racist. Maybe the most racist thing that a national politician has said since like Strom Thurmond's days. But it's if we're ranking the top 100 Trump offensive things, this is maybe number like 27.
Yeah, but it is perhaps the most offensive thing he said since everyone in the Republican Party endorsed him. And now whenever they see reporters that were asking them, do you agree with this? Do you support him still? You know, they don't really like that. So you've seen a lot of pushback against Trump and you've seen sort of some veiled warnings. I think there have been a couple of people in the party, like a New Jersey Cruz chairman who said that the party should look for someone else at the convention.
So Senator Mark Kirk who won the seat who won Obama's seat in 2010, which was a real kind of feather in the cap for the GOP wave of that year, he unendorsed. Can you recall in recent U.S. history a candidate unendorsing the presidential contender of their party? I can't.
I cannot either. And yesterday, I think after we had our botched recording yesterday, Hugh Hewitt, who's a radio host,
yes,
I believe he also said that conservatives should look towards dumping Trump at the convention.
Dump Trump. I mean, that if that's not the slogan, that should be.
Yeah, so a couple ways of doing that. And, you know, one would be that Trump really doesn't want this and find some way to just like drop out or whatever. And the other possibility is that at the convention, the Rules Committee, who can do whatever they want because it's, you know, their party, they can just unbind themselves and then vote however they want, which would be sort of a nuclear option because it
that's a good metaphor.
Okay. Yeah.
It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. It's their party. I think something a lot of people don't understand is that the nomination process, the convention, the Rules Committee, these are not laws. These are created by the parties. That's why kind of like some states have caucuses, some states have primaries. The Washington, D.C. Democratic primary still hasn't happened yet when the GOP Democratic the GOP primary in Washington, I think actually it was a caucus.
It was a caucus, yeah.
Washington, D.C. happened like 3 months ago. These are rules. These are not laws. These are rules. And there's a rules committee. And the rules committee can change the rules in the middle of the game. It's kind of like a reality TV show, if you will. Sometimes they change the rules. In fact, on the first season of the hit NBC show The Apprentice, I don't know if you watched that, but I did.
I heard about that.
Okay, it was on when I was a sophomore or junior in college. They changed the rules halfway through. The team started off half men, half women. Well, here's the twist. They changed it halfway through, and they combined the teams so that it was men. It wasn't just boys versus girls. It was co-ed teams. Okay, someone who we know very well has thrived in the reality TV atmosphere, but now he's a contestant. He's not a judge anymore or the titular decider. They can change the rules. So here's what I think, what I understand that I think people don't understand. The delegates are bound, but they are not really bound by any law of man or of God.
I should say, by the way, just like, I think there may be like a few states or something where there are state laws about this, but yeah,
okay,
not enough.
Going to be thrown in jail?
I don't think so, but maybe they would have to pay a fine or something. So
okay, $50 to the, you know, treasurer of the state GOP party in Pennsylvania or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not much when it's stopping the end of the GOP. So they can change the rules. People think that Donald Trump is the nominee. No, he's not the nominee until he's nominated at the convention. Well, there doesn't have to be a convention. The convention can be 1 day long or it can be 3 weeks long. This is not the Electoral College. These are rules invented by people, not enacted by the state or enforced by the state.
Right.
So the rules can change. That's my point.
The rules can change. I mean, the obvious risk there is that when you tell people that their votes count, and then at the convention you say, we didn't like who you picked, and you just strip everyone of their binding and they vote for someone who can win, then
you have riots.
And you may not have a political party anymore. So,
well, is there really a grand old party anymore? That's kind of what I think. I mean, parties end. The Federalist Party ended. The Democratic Republican Party transmogrified into the Democratic Party, and the Whig Party ended. And there are plenty of other third parties, you know, the Free Soil Party and all these other ones, and the Mugwumps and all these other people through U.S. history. I think 2016 is 1856. Thankfully, there's no like question like slavery or something dividing the nation, but I think the GOP is like a very likely could not exist in 4 years. Is that crazy?
I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I think the most likely path where we're headed is that Republicans lose this election one way or another, either with Trump. I mean, I would say almost certainly with Trump, or in the slim case that it's someone else who gets the nomination at a last minute putch, but
that's the term, a putch.
Yeah, I think so. but I think also then Hillary Clinton gets elected, then immediately, you know, the party realizes, oh, we hate Hillary Clinton, and they're unified again. And then they do well in midterms again, and then another presidential election comes around and they fall apart because they can't get their act together in a primary. So
okay, I was joking on Twitter. People have been saying for a long time that Newt Gingrich is Donald Trump's kind of like the most obvious nominee for the vice president. I joked on Twitter, but I was joking on the square. Okay, Clinton Gingrich 2016, a national unity ticket. We have to stop Trump. That seems more likely to me than Trump Gingrich. Trump Webb makes more sense to me than Trump Gingrich. I'm joking, but I'm not joking.
Yeah, I'm going to interpret that as a joke because I don't think Hillary Clinton will pick Newt Gingrich.
Okay, well, she can go many ways. This is a side note. She can pick Al Franken. She could pick Sherrod Brown. She could pick Elizabeth Warren. She can't pick Kirsten Gillibrand because they're from the same state.
Yeah.
But there's many options. She could pick Webb. That would be an interesting ticket, Clinton Webb.
Yeah.
She could go however she wants. But I think it's going to be a 48-state landslide. Maybe West Virginia will go for Trump if Trump is the candidate. I mean, do you think it's going to be a landslide pretty much no matter what happens?
No, I think it's going to be probably pretty similar to 2008 and 2012, where it's, you know, mostly
those are not very close races, though.
No, they were not, but they were still, you know, they were like, yeah, like 330, 340 electoral votes for the Democrat. I think it'd be like that with maybe another state or two added on.
Okay, well, in 2008, Obama won every swing state, plus Indiana, plus Nebraska, the single vote.
No, he did. Oh, yeah, the single vote in Nebraska, yeah.
And, you know, he won North Carolina.
Yeah. And, yeah, then 2012, and then 2012 was everything he won, 2008 minus Indiana, North Carolina.
And that Nebraska vote. Okay. Yeah. Do you think there's a state that Obama won in both times that Donald Trump could realistically win in 2016?
No.
Maybe Michigan?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Water
crisis?
There's all that talk about has, like, strength in the Rust Belt. I think that's sort of overblown completely.
Yeah,
so.
Yes.
Yeah.
John Kasich would have strength in the Rust Belt. Okay, right. here's another piece of it. Like I said, I've been having this kind of half-jokey theory, but joking on the square, that this is kind of like the movie The Producers, was also a hit stage show in the past 10 years. Okay, for people who haven't seen it, it's an American comedy classic. Gene Wilder and Zero Mostel characters realize that if they put together a Broadway musical that fails, they can make more money by kind of screwing the investors over, and they make this musical called Springtime for Hitler. And it's a total, you know, it's a total artistic disaster. You have women in, like, fishnet stockings who are dressed as stormtroopers, you know, doing, like, a Busby Berkeley, you know, swastika rotating around. It's hilarious, but it's a very dark comedy. Shockingly, in the movie, it's a smash success. Everyone loves it. And, you know, and they get their plan falls apart. That's my best metaphor for what's happened in 2016. Donald Trump did not want to win the GOP nomination. He does not want to be president. He wanted to have some fun, have some influence, have a little power, sell a lot of hats, receive the adulation of millions. That's really what he wants, is he wants love and adulation and respect. He doesn't really want power because he has enough power already. You know, he wants to play golf. He wants to have sex with women if he's still physically able to. He wants to fly around and hobnob with wealthy people and go on, you know, the Don Imus show or something like that, Morning Joe. He doesn't want to be president. There's a peaceful link to that by someone, a former PR communications person for Trump, who lays this out more or less as I'm saying it. It was published on ExoJane. This piece, I think, is a key primary source document for, you know, the 21st century American history. I don't think he wants to be president. Do you think he wants to be president?
I think he wants to be president without having to do anything that a president has to do. You know, I think he fancies the title of President Donald Trump, obviously, and he likes the perks.
How about Grand Marshal? Marshal Trump.
I think he likes the idea of the photo ops and just, you know, the idea of being the most powerful person in the world. I don't think he wants to, you know, have to make decisions about, you know, trade with Indonesia. Even though he talks about trade, I don't think he actually wants to make the decisions about it.
I think he does have some core beliefs involving trade, kind of mercantilism, unusual beliefs about, you know, how trade actually works and international relations. He has some core beliefs, but yeah, I don't think he wants to meet with the Prime Minister of Sweden.
I think it's generous to call those core beliefs. They're more like things that he enjoys saying because he thinks they get a reaction out of people.
Well, he has beliefs about power. That there's an interview that he did with Playboy, I think, after the Tiananmen Square massacre, in which he essentially said that China showed that they were powerful by, you know, massacring the protesters. Yeah. So I think that kind of is a core belief of his, that you need to project strength.
Oh, yeah. And he liked, he was also really taken by, oh my God, I'm blanking right now, North Korea dictator.
Kim Jong-il or Un?
Kim Jong-un, who, He was very impressed by how he got his uncles and some other people who are resisting him out of the power circle and consolidated power around himself.
Yeah, there was a rumor. I think it was
he thought that was very impressive.
There was a rumor that Kim Jong Un fed one of his uncles to a pack of rabid dogs. I think that was proved to be not true, but that's what happens in North Korea. Okay, the scion of a wealthy family with unusual hair you know, there's some linkages between Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il, right, and Donald Trump. We'll put that to the side. Okay. So anyway, if we think it's the producers, then there's been catastrophic success. Trump didn't want to win. He wanted to get second place. That's what this article that was published on ExoJane contended. I believe it. He doesn't really want to be president. Okay, postulate that. Obviously, Rents Priebus and Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney and John McCain, et cetera, do not want him to be president. The majority of the delegates, bound or unbound, don't want him to be president. What's the most likely thing to happen? I think it's that he does not become the nominee.
I think he does, for all of his recklessness, he does sort of have an instinct when he knows he's cornered. If you look at what happened after Wisconsin, when he put his foot in his mouth a lot, you know, called Ted Cruz's wife ugly, did a whole bunch of other stupid things, and then he got trounced in Wisconsin, and then after that he sort of laid low for a while, restructured his campaign a little bit, put Paul Manafort, who's sort of the veteran, in charge a little bit more, and he came back, and he was able to, you know, just sort of coast through. He was able to not egregiously go out of his way to be terrible for like 2 weeks, you know. And they coasted through.
Rein it in.
No, so, and I think
natural instinct is to shoot from the hip.
Right, and I think what you've seen though after there was like the other day on the Hill was just chaos with all these people issuing threats to Trump. Like, you've got to stop saying that. You had Mitch McConnell. You had Bob Corker, Senator from Tennessee, saying like he's got about 3 weeks to turn this around or something. Which is like, well, what does that mean? And then that night when
one would wonder.
Yeah,
it's a question.
And then that night when Trump was giving his election, his election night speech, he read off of a teleprompter, which was hilarious because it was clearly like the third time in his life he's read a teleprompter, because he was very much staring at the teleprompter and just reading it, you know, like squinting almost.
No, he's much closer to an improv comedian than to anything else in this
world. Yeah,
you know, he could just talk and talk, and he likes to, he's a freewheeling guy, freewheeling Donald Trump.
And it was sort of like, yeah, it was sort of like this very banal, you know, candidate speech, whatever, but Ryan Priebus, the chairman of the RNC, was afterwards just like, what a phenomenal speech that was, you know? And so...
Poor Rents. I mean, really.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for him at this point.
I think Trump recognized that, you know, he had to tone it down for a little bit. So he'll be quiet for a little while, and then he'll start it up again. Maybe after...
He sends his own tweets at night.
So,
the day, it seems like he yells it out to an intern, and the intern...
That's true. That's been reported. He hollers it out to his secretary.
Exactly. Exactly. Except he probably has 20 beautiful secretaries surrounding him at all times.
Well, yeah, I think the quote was, I shouted out to one of the young women, and then they posted...
Yes,
yeah.
Who are these young women? That's a question for a journalist to dig into. Anyway, okay. The time that really, for me, brought the whole kind of, like, conspiracy theory angle to it, which I know sounds semi-crazy, was, okay... So Indiana was kind of like the last stand for Kasich and Cruz, really more for Cruz. Okay, so Trump won Indiana, and that night Cruz drops out. Okay, so then everyone's thinking like, look, Kasich has a shot to win a couple more states, maybe California, Midwestern, upper Midwestern states. He drops out the next day. Why do you think he did that?
I think, and I know that Kasich has said he was very irritated by it. But once Trump won Indiana and Cruz dropped out, Priebus sent out a tweet saying that Trump was a presumptive nominee, and everything sort of looked to be headed in that direction. So I think Kasich was getting a lot of pressure, and, you know, Kasich didn't have the math anyway.
He could have picked up more delegates.
Maybe?
You know, like North Dakota, like... Kasich could have won that. Like,
I don't think he would have. Like, Kasich was always very weak. Like, this whole idea of splitting the... You know, where Cruz would go and compete against Trump in red states and Kasich would compete against Trump in blue states. Like, Kasich never picked up his end of the load there.
And yeah, he's not a great candidate. He is kind of a bumbling, you know, the Carl Digler view on him was, like, strangely accurate that he was just doing this so he could get free food all across the country. He's also a guy who clearly just loves traveling around, shaking people's hands. He's kind of like the Joe Biden of the right. Like, he was just having fun, telling stories.
Like, I didn't even think he was that bad. He was just not what the Republican Party wanted this year. Like, he did not want...
Yeah, he also worked for Lehman Brothers. There's a real...
That was another problem. But, like, he was just going around being like, you know, we're gonna work on... You know, balancing the budget, we'll make some compromise with Democrats, which, you know, is like how governing works, but no one in the primary electorate wanted that. So
no, I mean, 40 to 50% of them want Trump. Maybe less than that. Maybe more like 35 to 40%. Anyway, okay. As soon as Kasich dropped out, I was like, "What the hell is happening?" The way my mind works is, I immediately thought, "Okay, Mitt Romney placed a call to John Kasich and told him, John, it's time for you to drop out because we have our own strategy that's happening here. I want you to be my vice president." Now, Romney has the money and the connections to money people to run third party. But he also has the ability to steal it from Trump at the convention. Romney Kasich, Kasich Romney. You know, it makes a lot more sense to me than Trump Kasich. What do you think about that?
I think that's a decent ticket. I doubt it was Romney who urged Kasich to get out. He probably just saw the writing on the wall.
But why didn't he stay in for, like, a couple more weeks? He could have done it. Like, people would have given him money. There's anti-Trump energy out there. Why did he say the next day, I have to drop out? I mean, Bernie Sanders hasn't even dropped out yet.
Yeah, he was much further behind than Bernie Sanders was to Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you look at it, like, when Trump...
Sanders has been mathematically eliminated. He is kind of, if he thinks he can still win this, then he is a fool.
I know,
but Kasich is not a fool.
Kasich was mathematically eliminated in like early March or something. On the night of the Indiana primary, I think at the end of the night, Trump had about 1,100 delegates, and Kasich had about 150. Like, he was mathematically eliminated a long time ago, and his whole rationale for staying in was that he and Cruz would siphon enough delegates from Trump, and then they go to the convention, and the delegates who had won someone who could actually win in November would turn to Kasich.
That still seems very likely to me. Okay, if we remember that these delegates, okay, this is not okay. The Electoral College is actually you elect humans, but they almost never change their votes. These delegates are humans with free will and volition, and people have to go home and look at their children in the face, look in their little baby's eyes. And say, what future have I provided for you, little woke baby? No, they're Republicans, so they're not woke. They can do whatever the hell they want. As you said, there's a rules committee. They make the rules. These people make their own rules. They can say, screw you guys, I'm going home. Or I'm taking my toys and going home. Or I'm taking my party and going home. So if John Kasich, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and one or two other losers, Jeb Bush, have a combined 800, 900, 1,000 delegates, then that's a real fight. 1237 is meaningless until people start actually voting. Do you agree with that or not?
I just don't think, unless it continues to stay as bad as it was on, say, like Monday or Tuesday of this week, consistently every day, and I think until you show... Like, I honestly think that delegates aren't going to completely reverse the will of the voters. Until you see polling that shows, say, a majority of Republicans no longer want Trump as their nominee or something like that, then these aren't really things that you can entertain that seriously. Like, Trump has most of the party. Like, there are party elders who are not necessarily around him, and there are swing voters who are definitely not around him. But the party base is ready to vote for Trump, and half the party base loves Trump and thinks he's the best thing to happen in the world. So
the GOP has screwed over the party base for 40 years.
That's also a good point. Yeah,
I mean,
they've usually gotten away with it.
Trade
so.
Or open borders? No, that's why Trump has been able to exploit this position. The party base wants Medicare and Social Security. They don't. Maybe they don't care about Medicaid. The GOP has served a different master than its base. It served rich people and ideologues.
Right.
It served the Koch brothers. That's why it is like a diseased, it's like a cancer-ridden body that a infection was able to bring to the point of death. That's another metaphor for
what's
happening.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Trump is a parasite. Only a diseased host can take on this kind of parasite and be taken over. But it's not actually taken over. The party still does decide. Like, literally, the party decides. Who else is going to decide? It's not our Lord and Savior. It is 1,237 party hacks. They decide, right?
Yeah, unless they... I mean, they will decide. They'll probably
they will
decide something, and I think that decision is likely to be that we're going to nominate Trump because we can't not do it, because then we will no longer have a political party. And I know you don't think there's going to be a Republican Party, but I think probably the prevailing sentiment is, let's just get through these few months. Then he'll be gone.
They can get through a week. They can barely get through a week. Rince Priebus is drinking whiskey with breakfast. He needs to be committed to a mental ward for his own safety.
Yeah, I mean, they'll just say, we need to get it. We have to, you know, try to support him because that's who the voters wanted. Then he'll be gone. We'll have a Truth and Reconciliation Committee, you know. And then we'll...
Yeah, everyone will get a pardon, and then they can tell it actually happened.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And then, you know, and then...
Testimony.
Then they'll go back to, you know, wanting to voucherize Medicare or whatever. Whatever,
okay.
Whatever floats their boat.
Okay. No, but see, the scam has gone on long enough. If something can't last forever, it won't. That's kind of a commonplace saying. It can't be the case that a party relies on the votes of people whose interests they do not truly serve indefinitely. That's kind of what's happened since, you know, 1968.
Right, and I think what you're suggesting, that they'll go with someone who does represent their elite interests, would be them forcibly trying to continue an untenable situation.
But Trump only represents about 40% of the GOP base, which is like 20 to 30% of the country. So he represents like 15 to 20% of the country.
That's more than anyone else. But I mean, those positions, those, like some of those positions, you know, against trade deals, against cutting Medicare, Social Security, those are extremely popular positions. So, I mean, this was an opening, like, in both parties that I've been wondering, like, for years, honestly, like, how, you know, like, protectionism, even if it's a bad idea, is extremely popular on both sides.
For sure.
And I've been wondering how long it would take.
Rejected by the American people.
Yeah, I've been wondering, like, how long it would take for someone to exploit that to its fullest, and now they're doing it. And they have to, you know.
It's weird that it's happened this year and not 2012, you know? It's like, the American economy is doing pretty well. It's just weird that this is bubbling up now. I think Trump is a sui generis person. I mean, I had a little tweet storm that went semi-viral after he retweeted it. What I compared it to was, it was as if a carnival barker assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand in order to sell more tickets. That's my metaphor.
Yeah, that's a good one.
A joker has somehow upended American politics.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with... maybe why this didn't happen in 2012 and is happening now is just the push for immigration reform after the 2012 election, and that sort of brought about this new, like, like almost reawakening of protectionist, nativist, like Buchananite thinking.
It's weird that
protectionism and anti-immigration, you know, go pretty closely together. So
sure, it's weird that in both after the 2004 election and the 2012 election. Bush and Obama both said immigration reform is going to happen, and then it was thwarted both times. I mean, it's just kind of weird that that's a historical echo only 8 years apart. The great and good American people do not want open borders. That seems to be the case, or at least the people who really care about this and will vote on it and call their congressman do not want immigration reform. So it seems like we're going to continue on in this weird limbo state. I don't think Hillary Clinton's number one priority is going to be immigration reform. Well, here's a good question. What is Hillary Clinton's number one priority? What the hell does she want to be president for besides power? What does she want to do? I haven't heard a single thing.
Yeah, she's having trouble distilling that into a pithy one-liner, I think.
Or even, what is her main plank?
I think that she thinks she would be an experienced hand at the till, a good manager of government, someone who can protect what Obama's gotten, and, you know... Maybe.
But she can't run on that because the cool kid think Obama sucks? Like, what is happening? I don't quite understand it.
I mean, she's been trying to run on that, but you hear how much trouble I had.
Trying and succeeding. She
trying,
is the Trump's nominee.
Yeah, so... And also, you know, she's running, like, her, you know, when she talks about her career and her achievement, she talks about fighting for women and children. I think that's a big part of her message, too.
Okay, well, I fight for widows and orphans every day. That's meaningless, you know?
Yeah, what do you do.
What plans does she have? I don't even know. I follow politics closely. I can't identify a single plan that she has.
I mean, she has little, like, she actually has pretty, like, detailed, like, white papers in these, you know, she has a lot of like white paper policy things, like here's my 12-step solution to reform this sector or whatever. And, you know, which is good, and like I commend her for, you know, going into detail there, but that's not, I think she could also use a little bit more on the motivational or poetic side.
Why do you think she didn't run on a public option?
No, she does support the public option.
But she didn't make the centerpiece of her healthcare campaign. I mean, Sanders said Medicare for all.
Right.
Why didn't she just say public option? I mean, that's what.
Well, she has been recently. Yeah, she has recently said that she supports public option. She also said that she would support Medicare buy-in for people like 45 and up or something. So I mean, okay. She has these like, you know, these sort of middle ground policies or whatever, but they sort of
get, like ameliorist liberalism, centrist liberalism that the online world hates.
But
honestly, I mean, here's something that I've noticed since I'm not in the Beltway or in New York City. I'm out here in the wilds of Western New York. You know, I think a lot of people who follow politics closely or people who are paid to talk about politics for a living don't understand this. The average American doesn't care about politics at all. The average American spends maybe 15 minutes paying attention to the news every day. They have other shit to do. They need to get their children to bed every day. They don't know what the public option is. They don't really understand what free trade is. Maybe they understand what immigration is. They have a vague understanding of all. They're not stupid. They just don't have the time or the mental bandwidth to handle this shit. The metaphor I've used, I think I stole this from Chris Hayes, was that, you know, the average American follows politics in the way that the average American follows like a sport they don't care about at all, where they're kind of like, oh, it's the NBA finals. Like who is it?
Yeah.
Like that LeBron, that guy, you know, that's how the average American feels about politics. They are like checked out for 51 weeks a year. And then like it all comes back. To the average American, Hillary Clinton is not the person who masterminded the 1994 welfare bill. Hillary Clinton is a steady hand at the tiller. We remember her from the 90s. Her husband treated her badly, but she stood by her man, and she knows a lot. She was secretary of, what is it? I don't remember exactly, but I remember, she did something. Yeah. This is how the average American thinks about politics, in my opinion.
Oh, I think you're right. I think it also depends, like, the average person might also think, oh, Hillary, she's that crook, you know, or something like that.
Exactly. But that's the average person who Hillary could never win over. Right. I think Hillary's going to run, if it is Trump, which I still don't think. If it's Trump-Clinton, it's going to be Nixon 68. Clinton already has some Nixonian tendencies.
Yeah.
Dick_Nixon on Twitter is much closer to Hillary Clinton than to Donald Trump or Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Goldwater girl originally.
Yeah. You know?
So she is kind of a center-left person. It depends who she picks. If she picks Warren as VP, then that shows that she thinks there's, you know, she's afraid of an opening on the left. I mean, Jill Stein is out there. Sanders could run third party. He's not even a fucking Democrat.
Yeah, he's not going to.
Okay, well, that's interesting. She needs to protect her left flank. So that means Sherrod Brown, however you say his name, Elizabeth Warren, Al Franken, you know.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
that.
I think showing how her popularity among Bernie supporters and the need to bring Bernie supporters, I think Elizabeth Warren's star is rising in the last couple of weeks, especially because Warren has proven herself to be very good at going after Donald Trump. So
for sure. Two women on a ticket would be double American history, and against a clear misogynist,
right?
And someone who, I mean, do you remember that someone asked Trump whether he had ever paid for an abortion?
Yeah, that was Maureen Dowd. Yeah,
he didn't answer that question. Okay, that means the answer is yes. Okay, you know what I mean. There's a like two women against the guy who has hushed up pregnancies and paid off women and paid for their abortions, and has had three wives. And is an obvious kind of charlatan. This is going to be a landslide.
Yeah, but he tells it like it is.
So does Elizabeth Warren in her way. So does Al Franken. I mean, our blog.
No, they're PC. They're
going on about Al Franken as the vice presidential candidate. That'd be nice. Get the Jews. You can't have old uncle, you know, Bernie Sanders and the Mashugana, Jewish great uncle, but you can have Uncle Al, who wrote a hilarious book about running for president called Why Not Me that I recommend to all.
Wouldn't Al, they wouldn't want to, I mean, with a VP, you don't want to bring in someone who's going to have a lot of baggage hanging around. And even though Al Franken is a good senator, he's very popular in Minnesota, they're going to bring up all the shit he did when he was a comedian, you know, and all of the, like,
sure, he did cocaine. He was,
yeah, and like all the insults, you know, and they're going to.
Well, yeah. Who's they? Has Al Franken done anything in his life worse?
The Republicans
has done in the past year.
No, but why even distract? Like, it's just a matter of, like,
well,
attention. Like, why even distract from Donald Trump? Why not pick someone who, you know, there's not a lot to explore in the background? And
okay, well, who do you think is the most likely? A safe pick like Sherrod Brown or Julian Castro?
I think the safe pick is Tim Kaine, senator from Virginia.
Just, that would make crushing Bort and everyone else online, you know, commit seppuku.
I don't think Tim Kaine, like, I think a lot of times people confuse Tim Kaine for Mark Warner, and Mark Warner is probably a little more conservative.
Maybe I am confusing them.
No, but I don't think you're a little, I think there is an impression that Kaine is like a conservative Democrat. He's not really, and he's a pretty, I don't know, I like Tim Kaine. So.
Okay, what about Jim Webb? Is that crazy?
Yeah, that's crazy. They're not going to do that. I don't think Jim Webb even likes the Democratic Party anymore.
He was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy
under Reagan, yeah, and then he came to be a Democrat because there was a Democratic, you know, nomination available in Virginia.
Iraq. Am I right about that? That is, someone's killed in Iraq, or did his son just serve in Iraq?
I'm not sure. He was in Iraq, yeah.
Maybe his son was not killed. Maybe I have that wrong. Apologies to all involved. Okay, his son served in the military. He served in the military. He was disgusted by the Iraq War. He is kind of a Scots-Irish, you know, old school Democrat. But, I mean, he could be Trump's nominee for vice president. He could be Clinton's nominee for vice president. It's kind of an unusual position that he occupies. Also, he's kind of a joke, and everyone thinks he's a joke. But he's not a joke. He's a badass.
No, I don't think he's a joke. I think he. I think he just.
I mean, he talked about shooting a man during one of the debates. That was basically the only.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Okay. The man is a badass. Okay. Don't cut Jim Webb off in traffic.
I think Jim Webb just doesn't. He just feels out of place in the Democratic Party now. And
okay. Do you think he could launch a third party bid or something like that?
No.
Okay. It depends what he wants to do with his time.
I don't know what he does with his time. He's also a novelist. I think he likes writing books, Jim Webb.
Well, we need someone. I mean, we need Jonathan Swift or something to write the Game Change 3, because Halpern is not going to do a good job this year. I mean, Al Franken is the person to do it, I guess. Okay, we've been going on for a while, my crazy theories. I'm going to just put my marker down. I do not think the GOP nominee will be Donald Trump. I think it will be Mitt Romney, or maybe Rick Santorum, or maybe Scott Walker. It's not going to be Paul Ryan. He has a good job.
Where does Rick Santorum come from? Briefly.
He was the runner-up in 2012. He doesn't have a political future. He's a good Catholic man who believes that gay marriage is the same as man on dog. I mean, he's kind of a joke. Like, his name is Dan Savage turned his name into a sexual euphemism.
Yeah.
He's the obvious kind of, okay, sacrificial pawn type person, fall on your sword. Romney is the person who thinks he can save the country. Santorum is the person who it's like, okay, we're going to lose anyway. Let's just give it to Rick.
And then maybe he'll go away.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. I mean, if you run for president and you lose, you're still in the history books.
What about
that would be redemption for Santorum? Yeah, instead of being a frothy byproduct of lube and feces, he will be in the history books.
I think what's going to happen is
mention Santorum.
I think that Trump is going to be nominated. It's going to be up and down. Like the rest of the year, I mean,
a patient who's like just had like major heart surgery or something, and like every day you're like not sure if they're gonna actually, you know, croak for good.
That's no, there was something in Bloomberg yesterday. Like his advisors are worried that Trump is just gonna announce his VP on Twitter without telling anyone, and like yeah, that's definitely happening.
Okay, well, I was joking about this. This is only 75% joking. Okay. Ivanka Trump is going to turn 35 in October. Trump, 2016.
I wouldn't be surprised.
She's obviously smarter than he is.
Yeah, she's fine.
She is Marine Le Pen to his, whatever the hell the elder Le Pen's name is.
Old man Le Pen.
Like, almost literally, like, she is very attractive. She's Jewish, so that's a little different. But she's married to the scion of the New York Observer and New York real estate Kushner clan. She has a bright future in American politics, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
The elderly orange man who has captivated the souls of left and right, or whatever the hell. I don't know. Who do you think is the most likely? Okay, if it is Trump, who do you think is the most likely vice presidential pick?
I was thinking it was Newt.
Okay, but Newt just, like, dropped a bomb.
Yeah, they've been fighting now, so I don't think Trump's going to like that, so.
No, Trump obviously, I mean, Omarosa, that was my other joke.
I don't know
if you watched The Apprentice. I did. You know, Omarosa kind of knows her shit.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is, like,
there's never been an African-American vice presidential pick before. That would be history.
That's true. That would be historic. I think he may look at, like, Bob Corker or someone who's, like, a good senator and a grown-up. I just don't know if Bob Corker would want to be like, oh, my God, do I really?
He would want to say yes. That's the thing. You have to say yes.
Yeah. And I think
some of them are idiots, but some of them are not.
That's the thing. I think like Newt is the one who will say yes. So.
it has to be someone with nothing to lose, essentially.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay, Newt, Jim Webb, you know, one of his children, Melania. Can a vice president be nominated if they weren't a natural born citizen? There's a good constitutional question.
I don't even know.
What's Marla Maples up to these days? There's lots of different options out here, but it's not going to be a boring Midwestern senator. It's not going to be John Kasich, because John Kasich could maybe become president in 4 or 8 years. It's not going to be Scott Walker. It's not going to be anyone who has any kind of hopes of future political success, I think.
I think there's like... It's sort of a question of, you know, competing moral responsibilities. Like, is it, you know, you don't want to associate yourself with Trump and you want to stay clear of it, but it's also like, this guy could be president. Should he have someone at his side who, like, knows what the fuck they're doing?
Yeah, okay. Well, Dick Cheney, that's what comes to mind there.
I'm sure Dick would be up for it. Dick Cheney would love to be president again.
Exactly. Okay, here's the other thing. If through some unusual series of events, Donald Trump somehow wins the presidency, he is going to be impeached within a few months, I would think.
Yeah, weeks, I would say.
And then the vice president, whoever it is, you know, that's the path that Paul Ryan becomes president.
Yeah.
Okay, then they impeach Vice President Omarosa as well. And who's three in line? Well, it's Paul Ryan. And then finally, Social Security can be reformed.
Finally. Just what the American people have been craving.
Yeah, and then there really will be riots in the streets.
Yeah.
Okay, we're probably reached about the end of our time, and I'm obviously become kind of extra loopy. Is there anything else, like... Am I crazy? Like, should I have myself committed? What are the odds of my crazy theory?
I don't think you need to be committed yet.
Give it a couple more weeks.
I think if Trump is not the nominee, if they unbind themselves or he drops out or something, then you deserve a ticker tape parade and Nate Silver's job. So.
Oh yeah, Nate Silver. Jesus Christ, give me a break.
Well, let's not even get started on Nate Silver.
No. Yeah. I mean, poor Nate. Poor little Natey. He was showed up by a couple of Brooklyn comedians who invented a pundit named Carl Digler.
Well, now you're going to have his job if your loopy theory comes through. So
yeah, I should take over 538, and Nate will go back on the burrito beat, and he can travel the country eating burritos. Have fun,
Nate. ESPN money, yeah. That'd be great.
Exactly. You know, he should have stuck – okay, he got lucky. He should have stuck to burritos.
We should actually wrap it up now. But the answer is yes, you're a crazy person. God bless you.
Nate Silver, send me some free burritos or something if I'm right.
Yeah.
Nate Silver should take me out to the best burrito place in the country if I'm right about this. That can be my reward.
Deal.
Okay.
I'm answering for him, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he's Copos Mentis at this point that he can accept such a deal himself. Okay, well, Jim, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people find your stuff?
It's Slate Magazine, slate.com.
Slate.com. People
Slate.com.
And what's your Twitter handle?
It's Jim_Newell.
Okay, so those will be linked to. We will link to various things mentioned in this article. Stay tuned. You know, this can. I don't think this can. This election can get less crazy. I think it can only get more crazy. Jim, thank you for coming on. Thanks to all of our viewers and listeners, and we'll see you again next time.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.